Going to check this morning to see who is on the phone with us. Rita Mulkern from MDU.
I am here.
Tom Wilk.
Yes, I'm here, Mr. Chairman.
Marlene Bennett.
Yes, I'm present.
Sharon Mullen.
Yes, I'm here.
Larry Hettinger. Larry Hettinger. Is there anyone else on the phone joining us this morning? If not, this is the time and place of the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission meeting for Tuesday, June 28th, 9:30 a.m. at the State Capitol Building, Room 412. My name is Gary Hansen. I'm the chairman of the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission. Also here today is Vice Chairman Bob Saar and Commissioner Dusty Johnson. We would like to welcome all of those persons joining us on the web this morning. And according to the agenda, the first agenda item is consumer issues, and Jim Melhoff is not here.
I will be taking his report. Thank you, Commissioner Hansen. The commission has received a total of 816 consumer contacts during 2005. 56 of these contacts have been received since the last report was prepared on June 14th for the June 14th commission meeting. 22 of the contacts for this period involve telecommunication services, 7 of the contacts involve electrical services, 6 contacts involve natural gas services, 2 contacts involve gas and electric services, 7 contacts involve cellular phone service, 4 contacts were related to the Do Not Call registry, and 8 contacts involved miscellaneous items not regulated by the PUC. 679 of the 816 complaints received in 2005 have been resolved, and 2,073 of the 2,370 contacts received in 2004 have been resolved.
Thank you very much, Sarah. We have a addendum to today's meeting. Under natural gas, we will be taking the addendum first, NG05-006, because that is a request for approval, and if that is not approved, there's no point in taking the second one. So we will take the first one on the addenda in the matter of the filing by Montana Dakota Utilities for approval of a waiver of its purchase gas adjustment tariff. This is being... Is a staff person taking this, or is MDU going to first up? Rita?
I can certainly go first. This all relates to a refund that we received from Williston Basin Interstate Pipeline Company. And pursuant to our tariff, we put the refund in a deferred gas cost account. And normally, that we change that surcharge adjustment. We change that once a year, effective May 1 of each year. In order to start refunding the amount back to customers as soon as possible, we have requested a waiver of our tariff, PGA tariff, that states that a May 1 date is the effective date of the surcharge. We would like to implement a new surcharge effective July 1 to start refunding the refund. In order to do this, we requested a waiver of the portion of the tariff and also requested approval in less than 30 days notice because we did not file our PGA filing until June 10th. And so we're requesting both approval in less than 30 days and approval for a waiver of the tariff.
Thank you, Rita. Dave?
Yes, staff would recommend approval of accepting the filing with less than 30 days notice.
Is there any discussion by the commission? Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I will move to consider the request with fewer than 30 days' notice.
I will second.
And I concur.
Next item on the agenda is our main agenda under natural gas, item number 1, NG05-006, in the matter of the filing by MDU for approval of a waiver of its purchased gas adjustment tariff. Rita, will you be taking this first or Dave?
Well, Rita provided a good explanation of what the entire filing consists of. The MDU has proposed to utilize their currently tariffed over and under flowback mechanism in order to get the refund back to customers. Number one, when that dollar amount is injected into that mechanism, it initially offsets any over or under recovery that currently exists within that account. As of, for instance, in the Black Hills region, as of April 30th, 2005, the amount of the refund for the Black Hills region stood at $2,296,641. The amount under-recovered by MDU at that point was, the amount of refund is $2,900,112. The amount under-recovered by MDU at that point was $2,296,641. That offset leaves an over-recovery balance of only $603,471. By utilizing the mechanism, it does lower rates by the amount of the refund, and it tends to offset the amount of under-recovery which MDU would collect carrying charges on if there was not the offset. I'd be happy to answer any questions commissioners might have about the filing.
So what is the total amount that will be refunded?
The total amount for the Black Hills region due to the Wilson Basin refund is $2,900,000, stood at April 30th. Now, it's been gaining interest since that time, of course. At April 30th, 2005, was $2,900,112. For the East River system, on that same date, $443,582.
Thank you very much. Are there questions? Is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I would just note that this is great news, and certainly I think the legislature and the former commissioners are to be commended for seeing this through the end, and $3.4 million is going back to the consumers. It's their money, and 50,000 people will benefit, and with that in mind, I would certainly move to approve the waiver.
And I will second.
And I concur. Next item is under telecommunications, TC05-067, in the matter of the filing for approval of a master services agreement between Quest Corporation and Onyx Communications North Incorporated. Question before the commission is, today shall the commission approve the master services agreement? Sarah, are you taking this?
I would, unless anybody from Quest would have any comments.
All right.
The amendment or the master services agreement was properly filed with the commission. The agreement contained no discriminatory language and no comments were filed. Therefore, staff would recommend approval of the master services agreement.
Is there a Quest representative on the line? There you are.
They're in the audio.
Do you have anything to add?
I do not, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you much. Is there a motion? I will move that the commission approve the master services agreement.
And I second.
I concur.
Next item is TC05-074 in the matter of the filing for approval of a paging adoption interconnection agreement between Quest Corporation and Vantech Communications Incorporated. Question before the commission is, shall a commission approve the paging adoption interconnection agreement? Sarah?
Thank you, Chairman Hansen. Again, with this agreement, the agreement was properly filed before the commission. It contained no discriminatory language, and nobody commented during the 20-day time frame, so staff would recommend approval of the agreement.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Anyone wishing to give any testimony? If not, is there a motion?
I would move to approve the adoption, the paging adoption interconnection agreement.
I'd second that.
And I concur. Next item is item number 3 in the matter of approving amendments to the agreements of TC05-076, TC05-077, and TC05-078 in the matter of filing for approval of an amendment to an interconnection agreement between Quest Corporation and DIECA Communications in the matter of the filing for approval of an amendment to an interconnection agreement between Quest Corporation and Mid-Continent Communications. In the matter of filing for approval of an amendment to an interconnection agreement between Quest Corporation and Mid-Continent Communications. The question for the commission is, shall the commission approve the amendments to the agreements? Sarah.
Thank you, Chairman Hansen. Once again, all the amendments to the interconnection agreements were properly filed. No comments were received by the Commission within the 20-day time frame, and the amendments contain no discriminatory language. Therefore, staff would recommend approval of all the agreements, amendments to the agreements.
Thank you. Is there any further testimony? Commission action. I will move that the Commission approve the amendments to the agreements.
I second.
I concur.
Item number four, in the matter of disapproving the agreements in TC04-211, which is the matter of the filing for approval of an adoption agreement between Quest Corporation and Northstar Telecom Incorporated, TC05-031 in the matter of the filing for approval of a master services agreement between Quest Corporation and Piper Telecommunications, TC05-045 in the matter of the filing for approval of terms and conditions for interconnection, unbundled network elements, ancillary services, and resale of telecommunications services between Quest Corporation and Piper Telecommunications, TC05-068 in the matter of the filing for approval of a wireline adoption interconnection agreement between Quest Corporation and Primetime Ventures, TC05-070 in the matter of the filing for approval of a master services agreement between Quest Corporation and Primetime Ventures, LLC. The question before the Commission is, shall the Commission disapprove these agreements? Sarah.
Thank you, Chairman Hansen. As with all these companies, Northstar Telecom, Inc., Piper Telecommunications, and Primetime Ventures, Inc., none of them have filed certificate of authorities with the PUC at this time and have no immediate future plans of filing COA applications with us. Therefore, staff would recommend disapproval of these agreements.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Is there a motion?
I would move that we disapprove the agreements.
I will second.
I concur.
Item number five, in the matter of disapproving the amendments to the agreements in TC04-212, in the matter of the filing of approval of an amendment to an adoption agreement between Quest Corporation and Northstar Telecom, Inc., TC05-071, in the matter of the filing for approval of an amendment to an interconnection agreement between Quest Corporation and Primetime Ventures, TC05-072, in the matter of the filing for approval of an amendment to an interconnection agreement between Quest Corporation and Primetime Ventures, TC05-075, in the matter of the filing of approval of an amendment to an interconnection agreement between Quest Corporation and Northstar Telecom, Inc. Today, shall the Commission disapprove the amendments to the agreements? Sarah.
Thank you, Chairman Hansen. As by your previous action in the last bunch of agreements, you have disapproved the agreements. Well, these are amendments to the agreements that have come in subsequently. So since there don't have any agreements to amend at this point in time, we would recommend disapproval of the amendments to the agreements as well.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Is there a motion?
I would move that we disapprove the amendments to the agreements.
Second.
And I concur. Item number six is TC05-056 in the matter of the petition of DIECA Communications Incorporated doing business as COVAD Communications Company for arbitration of an interconnection agreement with Quest Corporation. Today, the Commission will hear oral arguments. And first up is COVAD. Good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Chairman, Brett Kennecke appearing with Greg Diamond this morning.
Good morning. My name is Greg Diamond. I am a senior in-house counsel for COVAD Communications. I am based out of COVAD Communications Denver office. And first of all, I'd like to thank the commissioners for granting me the opportunity to appear before you today. I realize it is a privilege, and I'm grateful for that for the opportunity. What is up before the commission today are two legal issues. Quest has filed petitions for arbitration in other states, but has or COVAD has filed petitions for arbitration in other states, but with certain of the states has agreed with Quest to present certain issues to the commission as legal issues only, so that we filed no pre-filed testimony and there's no need for an evidentiary hearing. The two issues that are before the court is whether this commission has authority in this arbitration proceeding to require Quest to unbundle network elements set forth in the competitive checklist of Section 271 of the Telecommunications Act of 1996. A sort of follow-on issue to that is, once you resolve that issue, is whether the commission has authority to set rates for those elements pursuant to the Telecom Act's just and reasonable standard. Obviously, COVID believes that the answer to those questions is yes. Both the FCC and state commissions have concluded time and again that, notwithstanding the whether COVID would be impaired without access to certain Section 271 elements, an RBOC like Quest must make the competitive checklist elements available to COVID at just and reasonable rates. If Quest had no duty to make Section 271 elements available to requesting carriers, its right to provide in-reach and long-distance service would effectively be eviscerated. Quest received authority from the FCC to provide in-region long-distance service on the condition that Quest would provision and continue to provision Section 271 network elements. Now, as a sort of an introductory comment along with those comments, is the idea that in the briefing and in this proceeding, Quest really never comes to grips with the FCC's black letter holding that regional bell operating companies like Quest must provision Section 271 elements. It is an absolute obligation as a matter of law, stemming from the FCC's seminal decision in their triennial review order entered in and adopted in 2003. Quest, in this case, relies instead of paying any attention to the black letter law of the TRO that was subsequently affirmed by the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, Quest instead relies upon four other commission arbitration decisions between Quest and COVAD, in which those commissions ruled ruled in favor of Quest. We would submit that those decisions were made in error simply because, again, like Quest, those commissions ignored the black letter law that Quest has an absolute duty to provide Section 271 elements to COVAD, irrespective of whatever obligations they might have to unbundle Section 251 elements. Now, in its reply brief, Quest does correctly point out that it provides all the network elements COVAD might want pursuant to its FCC access tariff. As a consequence, COVAD will not be without network elements. The problem with that, of course, is that the FCC access tariff can be changed by Quest at any time, and the rates, terms, and conditions of that tariff can be changed at any time either. So it really is up to Quest as to whether those elements are going to be provided or not. So that really provides little solace at all to COVAD in this instance. Now, getting into some of the details, and again, I'll try to keep my comments as brief as I can. We are specifically interested in the checklist items number 4 and checklist item number 5 of the competitive checklist. Item 4 refers to local loop transmission, and item 5 refers to local transport. Now, FCC in 3 very, very clear and distinct instances in the triennial review order affirmed this black letter law. This issue was addressed directly in the triennial review order. They say, we continue to believe that the requirements of Section 271 establish an independent obligation for Bell operating companies to provide access to loops, switching, transport, and signaling, regardless of any unbundling analysis under Section 271. Again, same order. As such, BOC obligations under Section 271 are not necessarily relieved based on any determination we make under Section 251 of unbundling analysis. And finally, checklist items 4, 5, and 6, I mentioned 4 and 5 just before, separately impose access requirements regarding loop, transport, switching, and signaling without mentioning Section 271. This specific holding was affirmed explicitly on appeal before the D.C. Circuit. This rule of law has been upheld and applied by several state commissions. And in our briefing, we mentioned both the Maine Public Utilities Commission as well as the New Hampshire Public Utilities Commission, having decided these cases. They involved Verizon Communications. Now, Quest argues in its reply brief that these two decisions really had nothing to do with arbitration petitions. Or interconnection arbitrations, and they're right about that. But the bottom line is, both of those dockets were pricing dockets involving Verizon's tariff or its SCAD. Now the SCAD is standard. Excuse me, I'm drawing a blank on what the SCAD stands for, but it's basically the terms and conditions that are available to a requesting carrier who doesn't otherwise opt into or negotiate an interconnection agreement with Quest. So it's effectively these proceedings are the same. Now, on this point, one of the hearing examiners in the main case specifically said, on this question of whether it makes sense for a state commission to determine whether there are 271 unbundling obligations provides states as follows. Indeed, it makes both procedural and substantive sense to allow state commissions, which are more familiar with the individual parties, the wholesale offerings, and the issues of dispute between the parties, to monitor ILEC compliance with Section 271 by applying the standards prescribed by the FCC, i.e., ensuring that Verizon meets its checklist items number 4, 5, 6, and 9 obligations. On the same point, the Maine PUC specifically said, in affirming the hearing examiner's decision, state commissions have the authority to arbitrate Section 271 pricing in the context of Section 252 arbitrations. That's where we are today. And then on the same issue, the New Hampshire Public Utilities Commission reached the same conclusion. The FCC's triennial review order has in fact rejected Verizon's argument that once the FCC determined that a uni is not necessary under Section 271, the corresponding 271 checklist item should be construed as being satisfied. So there's been obviously some recent activity from the FCC in its triennial review remand order, known as the TRRO, where the FCC continues to shrink down the availability of unbundled network elements pursuant to Section 251, meaning those certain elements that are no longer available at unbundled network element rates, meaning the TELRIC rate for those network elements. But Section 271 elements continue to be must continue to be made available to requesting carriers. All RBUCs have that continuing obligation. Otherwise, why would the FCC have given them in-region authority to provide in-region long-distance service? This takes me to the next logical question, and I confess that there is not a tremendous amount of law on this issue, because once you get to the point where you can conclude that there's a duty to provide Section 271 network elements, the only issue that's left is price. Now, this issue, again, the issue of price has not been decided, but the standard is just and reasonable. Now, along these lines, the same Public Utility Commission out of Maine made the following conclusion: that we have no record basis to conclude that TELRIC rates, the same rates that are available, the same pricing standard that is applied under Section 251, do not qualify as, quote, just and reasonable rates. COVAD does take the position that this commission has the authority to set 271 rates at the TELRIC level. Clearly, TELRIC would be a just and reasonable standard. Now, you may hear Quest argue that, well, wait a second, the FCC has said in the TRO that perhaps we can look at the access tariff that's on file. The problem with the access tariff from our perspective is it's not just and reasonable for COVAD to use these rates, because we cannot justify it from a business perspective. We simply cannot do business under those kinds of rates. Now, to that end, we have had the good fortune in working with Quest very, very cooperatively on entering into commercial agreements for certain facilities, such as commercial line sharing. And we certainly applaud Quest in their willingness to enter into these commercial agreements to basically reduce the risk of really what is essentially rate shock. Because special access rates are rate shock for us. We really can't do business that way. So to summarize, do I have an opportunity to make any reply comments at all, or is that would you typically limit it to?
Rolaine Wiest is handling this for the commission. So
yes, you will have.
I'll have a chance to reply.
Yes.
So I will not address the many arguments that Quest will no doubt bring up, and I'll reply at that time. So basically, in summary, you have 271 obligations. You conclude there's a duty there. Once you conclude there's a duty there, then you move to the pricing determination. And again, we submit that TELRIC is a just and reasonable rate. Thank you very much, commissioners.
Did the commissioners? I'd like to ask
absolutely
questions. This is Rolaine Wiest. Unless the commissioners have any questions first, or
I'm sorry,
Mr. Rislov. Yeah. Or I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Hello, I'm Greg Rislov. I do have a couple questions.
Sure.
In very general terms, could you explain in your mind what the purpose of 251, 252, and 270 are? 271 in general are very, very general terms.
In general, 251 sort of sets up the framework by which all incumbent local exchange carriers, except for rural carriers, have to enter into interconnection agreements with any requesting carrier. And under that scheme, state commissions are charged with the right to arbitrate the terms and conditions of those interconnection agreements. Section 271 is different. Section 271 only applies to the regional Bell operating companies, because when they come to the FCC, at first they come to this commission, and they obviously came to this commission at one point in time and said, please recommend to the FCC that we be granted Section 271 authority, the right to provide in-region long-distance service. They go to the FCC, and the Section 271 specifically says that if you, Quest, Regional Bell Operating Company, want to provide in-region interlata service, long-distance service, you must continue to provide those items listed in the 14-point competitive checklist. Now, for our purposes, we're only interested in two of those items, which would be loops and transport. Those are the only facilities that COVAD really gets from COVAD. We don't get switching from Quest. We don't get signaling from Quest and so forth. So those are the two unbundled network elements that we receive. So high level, that's really the distinction.
I appreciate that.
Sure.
To follow that up, in general, then again, where do you see the jurisdiction residing in those two sections?
Well, Mr. Rislov, to answer your question quite candidly, it's not been resolved. What you have are competing state commissions that have reached one conclusion, and then other state commissions that have reached another conclusion in terms of whether they have jurisdiction. For example, the Washington Commission said they don't have jurisdiction because they're preempted from making this determination. Well, the problem with that is state commissions don't have authority to engage in preemption analysis. Only the FCC can decide whether the Telecommunications Act preempts state law. So in that regard, the way I would kind of maybe pitch it to you in a little bit more pedestrian terms is Quest in its briefing never takes issue with the concept that it has a duty under Section 271 to unbundle certain network elements. The problem, and they come back and say instead that this commission doesn't have jurisdiction, but the commission does have jurisdiction because the commission is traditionally charged with setting rates for network elements. Given that, which you do, of course, when you determine rates for network elements pursuant to Section 251, either by way of an arbitration or by way of approving the rates that are set forth in Quest's SCAT for the state of South Dakota. So it only makes sense that this commission would have jurisdiction to set rates for Section 271 elements, as the New Hampshire Commission has concluded. The FCC is really not, and I don't know of any situation where the commission has been in the business of setting rates for network elements. And so, but again, it's not a settled issue. And so I would confess that you're going to have to make a determination based upon the persuasive authority that's out there.
And then one final question.
Sure.
With regard to impairment,
mm-hmm.
both jurisdictionally and what effect any decision of impairment would have on the state commission. Where does the jurisdiction determine impairment lie?
Well, impairment, the necessary impair standard is set out in Section 251. And that analysis is done by the FCC, as it has done recently, for example, in the Triennial Review Remand Order. It made determinations concerning certain thresholds where a requesting carrier made its determination that in some instances certain central offices of the regional Bell operating companies would not be, quote, impaired offices, such that there would be less availability of unbundled network elements, especially loops, and then specifically in the TRRO, loops and transport were a big-ticket item. There was switching was involved in that as well, but again, COVID is not interested in switching simply because it provides its own switching for itself. I hope that addresses your questions. Sure.
Commissioners?
Okay.
Good morning. Mr. Diamond, you had mentioned that if the commission ruled against COVAD, that the FCC access tariffs would be available, but it's subject to Quest filing that. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Quest could change those. The FCC, as far as I know, and Quest will certainly correct me if I'm wrong, but as far as I know, the Quest can change those tariffs anytime they want to with notice, but without the need to get commission FCC approval. And I think it could do that for its interstate tariff as well. I'm not sure about that, but pretty sure that with respect to its FCC tariff, it can change that without notice and can change prices can change rates. I believe it's on 30 days notice.
And do you have any recourse or relief if you take issue with those changes?
We the only recourse that we would have is to take the position that those rates were not just and reasonable. And again, that's a standard that has been the subject of probably some amount of litigation at the federal level. But again, it is not typically not in this setting when you're talking about network elements. It's our view that the jurisdiction properly lies with the commission to determine what those rates ought to be. And apply, I would concede applying the just and reasonable standard. I don't think there's any dispute about that.
And I'm just curious, how long do the agreements typically last? Is there a date certain?
These agreements are typically 3 years long. The date, the agreed upon date for termination of this particular interconnect section agreement would be, forgive me, going too fast. The expiration date that we've agreed upon for this interconnection agreement would be in 2008, so again, 3 years.
And during that time period, are they locked into the current FCC access tariff? They can change certain elements of that?
They can change the rates as they please, I believe, on 30 days' notice. They're not locked in. The ESCAT rates, if we agree to rates as to certain facilities that would get attached as an exhibit to the interconnection agreement, those rates would be fixed. But no, those rates, those access tariff, those tariff rates could be changed.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the commissioners? This is Rolaine Weiss. I just had a few questions.
Sure.
Just following up on Commissioner Saar's questions. So if Quest did change its tariff, then you could go to the FCC and dispute those rates?
I believe we could, yes, on grounds that they weren't just and reasonable. I believe we could, yes.
Or if Quest took away any of those elements, you could go to the FCC and say they weren't complying to Section 271?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they would do that, frankly. I was a little bit tongue-in-cheek before, but bottom line is they probably would not. Quest would probably not remove Section 271 elements from its access tariff or from its intrastate access tariff either.
Can you explain to me the dispute over Section 9.1.1.8?
You know, I don't have the agreement in front of me. Is it? Thank you very much. Which section again?
9.1.1.8.
They did a filing.
Someone isn't on mute on the phone. If you could put your phone on mute.
No, I thought about it.
9.1.1.8?
Yes.
Let's see.
What I have is intentionally left blank. I can't see the dispute.
Oh, yeah, I don't.
But it's listed in the petition. It's listed in briefs.
I think it's Quest controls these documents, and my experience has been with Quest that they do a very good job of tracking what's at issue. They have a person named Mary Sullivan whose job solicitor responsibility is to track these agreements. And so I, based on what is in here, I would say that 9.1.1.8 is not in dispute. Would that be a fair conclusion, Maureen?
Melissa. Yeah, under the intentionally left blank section, I would agree. There's probably no dispute.
No dispute at all. Fortunately.
Okay.
Fortunately.
So we could cross that one out of your petition.
We have lots of different people talking and people who haven't quite been introduced. It's really difficult for a court reporter. So
sorry, forgive us.
On some of the questions, please wait until the question's completed before you answer. And then when you give those numbers, if you would slow up just
sure.
a little bit.
Sure, numbers. Forgive me.
Thank
forgive
you.
Me. Bad habit of mine, Commissioner.
Had available...
There's still someone that's on the phone who does not have their phone on mute, and we can hear them. Could you please put your phones on mute? It's someplace else, you think? Okay. Well, we'll just have to talk over it. In the Utah order, I think it was in there, paragraph 33, the order stated that COVID admitted that only the FCC can enforce noncompliance with the 271 checklist. Would that be an accurate statement?
That's an accurate statement, but I think that what's uncontested here is I don't think Quest is going to dispute its obligation to provide 271 elements. I think what's really the linchpin here is at what rate. We acknowledge that it's not going to be a TELRIC. It's not going to be the commission is not required to impose TELRIC rates, which it would otherwise be required to do for purposes of its Section 251 uni. But for 271, you have the just and reasonable standard, which can be, again, it's a more amorphous standard, but we would suggest that TELRIC is at least just and reasonable because it's certainly a lower rate than the access tariff, which, again, for our purposes, from a purely business perspective, we don't consider it just and reasonable because we can't make a business case to do business using the access tariff rates.
So if the commission were to find that we could impose this as an unbundling element, you know, that you're disputing, would there be a further proceeding to decide what the rates were under TELRIC, or would you first?
You could have a further proceeding if you wanted to set the rates, or alternatively, you could conclude that that Quest use a TELRIC rate, which is a standard that the wholesale rate based on an existing cost model. And it may be that they already have rates that are consistent with TELRIC already. So, but again, nothing precludes this commission from having further proceedings on the rate, which I would advocate would be within the realm of what state commissions do, not the FCC. The FCC doesn't have cost dockets. It doesn't have evidence about cost models and so forth. It's really something that is traditionally within the realm of the state commissions since passage of the 1996 Telecom Act.
And going again to the Utah order, I believe they quote, and I think it was in their paragraph 44, they quoted the TRO at paragraph 664, and they stated that the FCC implies that it has sole authority over such elements and that Box should make Section 271 elements available through interstate tariffs or commercial agreements. How would you reply to
that? Well, again, the problem with that is that while obviously that's what it says, it doesn't really deal with the question of rates directly. And you're still faced with this question of, okay, where are we going to end up on rates? And that again, is the most difficult question. And again, we know what the standard is. It's just and reasonable. And that's all I could say about that particular section.
And then I think Utah also quoted from paragraph 195 of the TRO, more or less stating that if a state required unbundling of a UNE for which the FCC has found no impairment, then the FCC stated that such a decision would likely conflict with this or substantially prevent implementation of the federal regime in violation of. How do you get around that paragraph?
Well, the way I get around it is I go back to the previous statements, the previous very unequivocal statements by the FCC and the TRO, that there is a black letter obligation to unbundle Section 271 elements. And I would be hard pressed to, even if that network element happens to be a network element that the commission has delisted from the 251 obligations. And again, when it delists them, it's saying you, Quest, or you, RBOC, no longer have an obligation to provision that uni at TELRIC or wholesale rates. That's what it's really saying. And so, what's before this commission is, at what rate are we going to set for unis under Section 271? I think everybody was going to concede that the 271 obligations continue, given the fact that Quest has long-distance authority in its region, certainly within South Dakota.
And you also cite to state authority for stating that these unbundled elements should be provided. If the commission were to find that we couldn't not add to unis that the FCC had delisted, in order to make that finding, are there any state statutes that we would actually have to find were preempted?
No, I don't. What I would call a very general unbundling statute, and so you would have the right under that statute on order unbundling. But to answer your question, we're not asking you to add to the list the 251 list. We're simply asking you to enforce the Section 271 list. There are apples and oranges. There's a delisting of 251 element at TELRIC rates, but there's a continuing 271 obligation at just and reasonable rates. And that's really the crux, I think, of the issue that's before this commission today.
And then can you respond to Quest's request to not use the amendment process for removing UNEs from the interconnection agreement? They mentioned that in their brief.
Did they mention that in their brief?
Yes, page 22 of their
brief.
My
experience has been that Quest has actually given us, in response to the triennial review remand order that was effective on February 4th, they've actually, unlike the other RBOCs,
right,
have said, we're not going to stop providing these unis. We're going to continue to provide them subject to true-up. And they have actually provided us with a proposed TRRO amendment, unlike, again, the other RBOCs. So I commend Quest for doing that. It has made our life much easier in the Quest region. And so I think that, notwithstanding what they said in their reply brief, I think that they very much will negotiate an amendment with requesting carriers to implement the provisions of the TRRO.
And then
we could, as part of that process, negotiate perhaps 271 issues as well, sort of telegraphing our position a little bit.
And this is another question you might want to look at the actual agreement
sure.
for, but does COVID agree with the delisted UNEs in Quest Section 9.1.1.6? Do they agree that that's accurate? It's around page 119.
Yeah, I have it. That's accurate, yes. That's correct.
Okay, that's all I had.
Thank you very much.
Are there any other questions from the commissioner? Thanks.
Thank you very much. Very, very much. This up here for Melissa.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Melissa Thompson, and I'm appearing this morning on behalf of Quest Corporation. And this morning's argument feels like kind of a unique opportunity to me because it's the first time since I started appearing before you where the issue that we are arguing about this morning has been considered by other commissions, and all of those commissions have ruled in Quest's favor on that issue. These states include Iowa, Washington, Minnesota, and Utah. The resolution reached in Colorado also supports Quest's position because there, COVID simply agreed to the language that we're disputing this morning. The remaining issue, the one sole issue before the commission this morning, is whether this commission will allow COVID to bring Section 271 network elements into a proposed Section 251-252 interconnection agreement and apply a rate scheme, that being TELRIC, to those elements, in spite of the fact that the FCC and courts have held that those rates do not apply. Is Quest required to provide access to unbundled network elements under either Section 271 or under state law, even if it is not required to provide that access pursuant to Section 251, and even though that access conflicts with decisions made by the FCC and other courts? In arguing yes, COVID is basically trying to do an end run around FCC and district court rulings, particularly the Triennial Review Order, the TRO, and the Triennial Review Remand Order, the TRRO. And the other states agree. In Washington, the commission concluded, quote, "This commission has no authority under Section 251 or Section 271 of the Act to require Quest to include Section 271 elements in an interconnection agreement, and any unbundling requirement based on state law would likely be preempted as inconsistent with federal law, regardless of the method the state used to require the element." Iowa ruled similarly. There, the Utilities Board said, "The first question is whether the board has the authority, when arbitrating interconnection agreement pursuant to Section 252, to impose unbundling obligations pursuant to Section 271. Section 271(d)(3) of the Act gives the FCC the authority to determine whether an RBOC has complied with its provisions, including the checklist. The 96 Act gave state commissions only a consulting role in that determination. The arbitration process that is mandated by Section 252 is concerned only with the implementation of an ILEC's obligations under Section 252. In arbitrations, then, a state commission only has the authority to impose terms and conditions related to Section 252. Section 252A specifically states that the negotiations it requires are limited to, quote, requests for interconnection services or network elements pursuant to Section 251. The board continued, "Clearly the provisions that are at issue in this arbitration are unbundling obligations pursuant to Section 271 rather than Section 251 obligations. Therefore, the board lacks jurisdiction or authority to require Quest to include these elements in an interconnection agreement arbitration brought pursuant to Section 252, which this is." The board continued, "The U.S. Supreme Court has stated that the 96 Act does not authorize, quote, blanket access to incumbents' networks. Rather, Section 251(c)(3) authorizes unbundling only as required as by Section 251. Following that, Section 251(c)(3) authorizes unbundling only as required by Section 251. Excuse me. The board concluded, the board said, following that, Section 251(d)(2) provides that unbundling may be required only if the FCC determines that access to such network elements is necessary and that the failure to provide access to network elements would impair the ability of a telecommunications carrier seeking access to provide the services that it seeks to offer. The Minnesota Commission concluded similarly, finding that it did not have jurisdiction, and in fact, in the arbitrator's report, the Commission actually adopted the part of that report with respect to the issue that's before you today, in which the arbitrator said there is no authority by the Commission to determine whether Section 271 elements apply in a Section 252 arbitration. As a side note, in Utah, the Commission stated, quote, "Section 252 was clearly intended to provide mechanisms for the parties to arrive at interconnection agreements governing access to network elements required under Section 251. Neither Section 251 or 252 refers in any way to Section 271 or state law requirements, and certainly neither section anticipates the addition of new Section 251 obligations via incorporation by reference to state law or Section 251. In Iowa, in Minnesota, in Utah, in Washington, and now in South Dakota, COVAD has argued that state commissions may require Section 271 network elements to be included in arbitrated interconnection agreements because of the FCC's decision that BOCs have an independent obligation to provide access to loops, switching transport, and signaling network elements under the checklist in 271, regardless of the unbundling obligations in Section 251. So what is the difference between a Section 271 element and a Section 251 element, and who has authority over these elements? The statutory scheme in Section 271 provides that the FCC is solely responsible for determining whether a BOC should be allowed to provide long-distance service. The Act requires the FCC to consult with the State Commission as to whether the BOC has met the statutory requirements for providing that service, but provides no decision-making authority to the State Commissions. In the case of Indiana Bell Telephone Company v. Indiana Utility Regulatory Commission, the Court stated, quote, excuse me, "Sections 251 and 252 contemplate state commissions may take affirmative action towards the goals of those sections, while Section 271 does not contemplate substantive conduct on the part of state commissions. Thus, a savings clause is not necessary with respect to Section 271 because the state commission's role is investigatory and consulting, not substantive in nature. Consistent with this, as COVAT has conceded, the FCC has sole authority under Section 271 to enforce BOC compliance without any shared decision-making with state commissions. In the same way that the FCC has sole authority to enforce compliance of BOCs with Section 271, under Section 251(d)(2), the FCC has sole authority to determine under the necessary and impair test what network elements must be unbundled. The D.C. Circuit Court confirmed in USTA-2 that Congress did not allow the FCC to have state commissions perform this test on their behalf. The case of Iowa Utilities Board makes clear that the essential prerequisite for unbundling any given element under Section 251 is a finding under the impairment test, and that is delegated and has been established in the FCC. If there has been no such FCC finding of impairment, the Act does not permit any regulator, state or federal, to require unbundling under Section 251. In the triennial review order, the FCC confirmed, quote, based on the plain language of the statute, we conclude that the state authority preserved by Section 251(d)(3) is limited to state unbundling actions that are consistent with the requirements of Section 251 and do not substantially prevent the implementation of the federal regulatory scheme. In the TRO, the FCC continued, quote, if a decision pursuant to state law were to require unbundling of a network element for which the commission has found no impairment and thus has found that unbundling that element would conflict with the limits of Section 251(d)(2), or otherwise declined to require unbundling on a national basis, we believe it unlikely that such a decision would fail to conflict with and substantially prevent the implementation of the federal regulatory regime. Federal courts interpreting the 96 Act have agreed. In Indiana Bell Telephone Company v. McCarty, the Seventh Circuit cited the triennial review order and stated that, quote, we cannot now imagine how a state could require unbundling of an element consistently with the Act where the FCC has not found the statutory impairment test to be satisfied. Similarly, the United States District Court in Michigan observed that in USTA-2, the D.C. Circuit, quote, rejected the argument that the 96 Act does not give the FCC the exclusive authority to make unbundling determinations. The Court emphasized that while the Act permits states to adopt some pro-competition requirements, they cannot adopt any requirements that are inconsistent with the statute and federal regulations. The Court held specifically that a state commission, quote, cannot act in a manner inconsistent with federal law and then claim its conduct is authorized under state law. Consistent with these decisions, in its Bell South declaratory order, the FCC addressed orders from four different state commissions that require Bell South to provide DSL service over unbundled loops. This requirement, the FCC determined, effectively obligated Bell South to unbundle an element which the FCC had specifically refused to require it to unbundle in the TRO. The FCC stated, state authority is preserved under the Act only to the extent state regulations are not inconsistent with the Section 251. Because it had refused to require ILECs to unbundle these loops in the triennial review order, the FCC held that the four state orders requiring such unbundling directly conflict and are inconsistent with the Commission's rules. In addition to arguing that this Commission should incorporate Section 271 unbundling obligations in a Section 251-252 ICA, COVAD proposes broad unbundling under state law that ignores what the FCC reaffirmed in its Bell South declaratory order. The FCC reaffirmed in its Bell South declaratory order that the Act's savings clauses preserve independent state authority only to the extent that that authority is consistent with the Act. Just as an example, the clash between COVAD's state unbundling demands and the federal unbundling scheme is demonstrated by COVAD's language proposed here in Section 9311, which would require Quest to unbundle feeder subloops. In the triennial review order, the FCC refused to give CLECs unbundled access to this element, finding that such access would undermine the objective of the Act to, quote, spur deployment of advanced telecommunications capability. A state-imposed requirement to unbundle feeder subloops, as here, would conflict with this FCC determination. To be clear, Quest is not arguing that state commissions have no authority under the Act or under state law to order unbundling. The FCC summarized this issue very well in its Bell South declaratory order, saying, quote, in the TRO, we rejected both the argument that states are preempted from issuing unbundling requirements as a matter of law, and the contrary argument that the states may impose any unbundling framework they deem proper under state law without regard to the federal regime. Rather, based on the plain language of the statute, we concluded that the state authority preserved by Section 251(d)(3) is limited to state unbundling actions that are consistent with the requirements of Section 251 and do not substantially prevent the implementation of the federal regime. The South Dakota statutes recognize the interplay between federal and state jurisdiction. COVAD cites 49.31.15 in its briefing, but not 49.13.3. Section 49.31.3 says, quote, the commission has general supervision and control of all telecommunications companies offering common carrier services within the state to the extent such business is not otherwise regulated by federal law or regulation. I want to turn now to Quest proposed section 9117. I'm sorry, to COVAD's proposed section 9117, in which existing TELRIC rates would apply to network elements that Quest provides pursuant to section 271. COVAD in 9117 proposes that these rates be granted or allowed in accordance with sections until new rates are established under Sections 201 and 202 of the Act or applicable state law. Sections 201 and 202 of the Act govern the rates, terms, and conditions applicable to the unbundling requirements imposed by Section 271. They provide no role for state commissions. A state administrative agency has no role in the administration of federal law absent express congressional authorization. The FCC ruled in the triennial review order that it will determine the lawfulness of rates that Box charge for Section 271 elements in connection with applications and enforcement proceedings brought under that section. In requesting that the Commission adopt its rate proposal, COVAD is asking the Commission to exercise authority that it does not have and that rests exclusively with the FCC. COVAD's demand for the temporary application of TELRIC pricing to Section 271 elements violates the FCC's TRO. The FCC ruled that any elements in ILEC unbundles pursuant to Section 271 are to be priced based on the Section 201-202 standard that the rates must not be unjust, unreasonable, or unreasonably discriminatory. As Quest discussed in its briefing, as I've mentioned here, there is no statutory or other legal basis for including terms and conditions relating to network elements provided under Section 271 in a Section 252 interconnection agreement. Indeed, the FCC has defined interconnection agreements that must be submitted to state commissions for approval as only those that contain an ongoing obligation related to elements in 251 B or C. Thus, the term interconnection agreement as used in Section 252 encompasses only the terms and conditions relating to network elements and other services identified in Section 251. The correctness of this interpretation was confirmed in a decision issued just 2 weeks ago in the federal court in Montana, in which the court ruled that the only agreements state commissions have authority to approve under Section 252 are interconnection agreements that contain Section 251 obligations. This ruling confirms that the interconnection agreement resulting from this Section 252 interconnection arbitration should only include terms and conditions relating to Section 251. The cases cited by COVAD are readily distinguishable. The Maine and New Hampshire decisions that COVAD relies upon so heavily had to do with a state tariff, which Verizon promised to file in the context of Section 271 proceedings. The authority in question in those cases had to do and was based upon a state tariff, not on Section 271 or the Act. As a final note, it is important for the Commission to keep in mind that just because the party's ICA does not provide for particular elements as unbundled network elements does not mean that those elements are not available. Just as Quest and COVAD have executed commercial agreements for commercial line sharing, they too can reach commercial agreements or go through a tariff to obtain these other elements, and I think Mr. Diamond addressed that issue well. In conclusion, Quest respectfully asks the Commission to follow the decisions issued in Minnesota, in Iowa, in Utah, in Washington, find that this Commission does not have authority to require Quest offer Section 271 elements as part of a Section 251-252 ICA, and adopt Quest's proposed language for the parties' interconnection agreement. Thank you.
Any questions from the commissioners?
Good morning, Ms. Thompson. You cited the Iowa, Washington, Minnesota, and Utah decisions. In those cases, would you say that it was based primarily on interpretation of federal law, or was there some sort of state restriction on hearing those proceedings that might not be here in place in South Dakota?
I believe all those decisions hinged on an interpretation of federal law. Taking the Iowa example, just because it's right in front of me and I quoted from it, COVAD made a similar argument trying to rely on state law to unbundle. ALJ actually was the board in this case. The utilities board walked through an analysis of that and found the board actually said it cited the state law, and then it said finding that the facility is not capable of being duplicated or obtained elsewhere is required by this section of the state law for the board to find that an element is an essential service and require Quest to provide that element. Such a finding may not be appropriate where the FCC has found that access to the element is not impaired. At least, there is no evidence here that would support such a finding. Thus, in this case, state law does not provide a separate basis for requiring that Quest provide access to unbundled network elements. And what the board was going to there was the necessary and impaired test, the fact that COVAD had presented no evidence that it is impaired or that these elements are necessary, and therefore denied, you know, COVAD's claim on that basis.
Have any of these cases been appealed? Do you know?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
Not yet.
Not yet. Thank you.
Any other questions from the commissioners? I just had a couple of questions, Ms. Thompson. I know in the Utah decision, they said it, I mean, they agreed with you, but they did state that they rejected Quest's apparent view that the Utah Commission is totally preempted by the federal system from enforcing Utah law requiring unbundled access to certain network elements. Was that your view there in Utah? Or is that your view now?
No. Again, we are not talking about a state being completely preempted or talking about a state not having the ability to unbundle.
Right. That's why I was confused by that statement.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I've got the decision in front of me. And do you know what page is that on?
That's on page 19 of the – there's the arbitration report and order. There are two different decisions.
Really, you know, the crux of Quest's argument is really that – states have authority to order unbundling so long as it's not inconsistent with federal law.
And then also in that same order, I believe the Utah Commission deleted your list of former network elements by stating that it was confusing to keep them in. That was in section 9.1.1.6. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, I'm vaguely familiar with that part.
And then if you have the actual agreement that you filed with us or that COVAD did, looking at 9.1.1.6, I was kind of confused by how that was listed in there. I mean, the Utah Commission specifically lists order elements A through R. In your brief, you mentioned 18 elements. And then when I go to that page, I find elements A through P in there. Can you explain that?
There may have been slightly different agreements filed in Utah than in South Dakota. So that may be one answer to kind of the change in the lettering and the reduction in the number of elements.
It looks like it was just left off, though, but... If you look on page 119, there's two pages, 119. One says it's deleted, and the other one says it's a little part where it's called deleted.
Yeah, it looks like this page has been edited as part of the agreement. And without Mary Sullivan at my side, I'm sorry, I can't.
Could you clarify that perhaps afterwards as to which elements you're talking about there? And did you disagree with the Utah Commission's position that it would be redundant or confusing to list those elements?
No, I mean, I think, you know, that, you know, Mr. Diamond's testified that this is an accurate list, and just so that parties are clear, you know, Quest would like this list to be included in the agreement. It's reflective of accurately of federal law.
Okay. And then I believe COVID stated that an administrative agency can't find that a state statute has been preempted or something similar to that. Is it does Quest think that we would need to find that any state law is preempted in order to agree with your position?
No, not whatsoever.
And then going to a question that I asked Mr. Diamond, on page 22, I believe, of your brief, and maybe I mischaracterized it, but you mentioned that the commission should also approve Quest language and not require Quest to continue providing network elements that the FCC has delisted until the commission approves an ICA agreement. What section is that under then?
I'm sorry, Roland. I think I missed the question.
Can you go to page 22 of your reply brief? Do you have that handy?
I do.
And I asked Mr. Diamond this, I believe, and he seemed surprised by it, by using the stating, or you can just read through it. It's just that one paragraph there.
I'm not sure which language this is in the agreement, but I know that the point of this provision or this paragraph and the point that was made here in the brief is that to require Quest to continue to make amendments is contrary to the parties negotiating independent commercial agreements and negotiating separately in transactions for these elements as opposed to having to come in and seek the commission's approval every time. Those two things being contradictory.
Right. I just thought it was Quest's position when the TRO first came out that Quest was going to go through the amendment process in order to change this. Isn't that correct?
Certainly with respect to the change of law provisions and that kind of thing that are reflected in the interconnection agreements. I mean, it certainly always has always been Quest's representation and intent to follow the letter of its interconnection agreements. So I think I'm losing you here, or I'm lost.
Well, if you could just, at some point, maybe afterwards, if you could just point me to the section where that language is.
Sure. Yeah,
that would be helpful.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's all I had. Any other questions from the commissioners? Thank you.
Thank you.
And if you would care to have a rebuttal.
Yeah, just a few clarifying.
Go ahead.
Nothing to necessarily rebut, but just to clarify our position. Again, just on the record, a couple of clarifying questions. The fact that we didn't agree the fact that we've agreed to Quest's language on this issue in Colorado isn't an admission here. It's not a binding admission here. We made that decision for business reasons unrelated to whether or not we disputed it or not. So I don't think you can give a whole lot of weight to that. Ms. Thompson made this reference to providing blanket access to unbundled network elements. And again, to sort of emphasize, we're clearly not asking the commission to order Quest to provide unbundled network elements pursuant to Section 251 at TELRIC rates. What we're saying is there's this whole separate obligation under 271 as an RBOC where they have to unbundle network elements. So we're limited by that list in Section 271. It's not all unis or all parts of their network. It's clearly limited by Section 271. Ms. Thompson mentioned that we haven't provided evidence of impairment. And again, as I indicated in my opening comments, there are several times the FCC has made it clear that there is no impairment analysis necessary for purposes of determining unbundling under Section 271. It's absolutely separate. The necessary and impair standard is only pursuant to Section 251. That's it. The only comments I have. Do you have any other questions?
Any other questions from the commissioners? If not, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rolaine. That will conclude the hearing. We will go on with our meeting then to telecommunications addendum item TC05-062 in the matter of the request by South Dakota Network for a waiver of a requirement to file a switched access cost study. The question before the commission today is, shall the commission approve the waiver of the requirement to file a switched access cost study? Who will appear first? Keith?
I will take that. ARSC 2010-2707 requires the local exchange carriers to file switched access cost studies every 3 years. Since SDN's last cost study was filed in June of 2002, SDN needs to file a current study in June of 2005. On May 16th, SDN submitted a petition requesting a waiver from filing that study. In its petition, SDN indicated that the preliminary information would support that a rate increase, which SDN does not wish to implement at this time. Additionally, they indicate that completion of a cost study would only increase the rate even higher. In response to a data request, SDN provided some preliminary information which compared the 2001 test year used in their previous filing to the 2004 test year, which would be used in a current filing. This information indicated a slight decrease in the revenue requirement and a slight decrease in the minutes of use. Since the percent of decrease in the minutes of use is greater than the percent of the decrease in the revenue requirement, it actually does indicate a slight increase in the switched access rate, thus supporting SDN's claim. With that, I would recommend that the Commission grant SDN's waiver from filing a cost study for the next 3 years.
Thank you, Keith. Is there anyone else wishing to appear before the Commission on this item? Are there any questions by the Commission? I will move that the Commission approve the waiver of the requirement to file a switched access cost study.
Second.
I concur.
TC 05-073 in the matter of the request by the Local Exchange Carriers Association and its members for a waiver of ARSD 2010-2714. Questions before the Commission. Today, shall the Commission grant AT&T Communications of the Midwest motion to accept AT&T's late-filed petition for intervention? And secondly, shall the Commission grant AT&T Communications of the Midwest, Inc.'s petition for intervention? Thank you. Sharon, are you on the phone still?
Yes, I am, Your Honor. AT&T Communications of the Midwest filed a motion to intervene and also filed a motion to accept our late file petition for intervention. In this, we submit that while we filed the petition 2 days after the deadline, we request that you approve approve the intervention because there would be no prejudice or harm to any party by approving our intervention, and AT&T views the petition as having a potentially harmful impact upon AT&T and our customers.
Thank you. Does staff have anything to present? If not, hello.
Good morning. I'm Darla Rogers representing LACA, and I would just inform the commission that we do not object to AT&T's petition or their motion to allow you to grant them intervention, even though it is beyond the deadline.
Thank you, Darla. Does staff have anything?
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer from staff. Staff would also recommend the granting of the motion and the petition to allow AT&T to intervene.
Appreciate that. Is there any questions by the commission or a motion?
I move that the Commission grant AT&T Communications of the Midwest Incorporated motion to accept AT&T's late-filed petition for intervention, and I move that the Commission grant AT&T Communications of the Midwest Incorporated petition for intervention.
I second.
And I concur. That ends the agenda. We have announcements. The next regularly scheduled commission meeting will be held July 12th. We also have commission meetings July 28th, which is today, and August 9th. The meeting today is at 1:30 to 5 p.m. It will continue tomorrow from 9 until 3 o'clock in room 412. We will be having an instructional presentation on regional transmission organizations. We also have scheduled a docket EL04-016 for 10 a.m. August 2nd and continuing 8:30 a.m. August 3rd through the 5th in this room in the Capitol Building. Thank you for joining us today.